Hello, Star Trek fans, and welcome to the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast. My name is Kim.
And my name is James.
And we're watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine from the beginning, one episode at a time. Welcome back to the podcast. Today, we are on Season 2, Episode 9, entitled Second Sight. This episode aired November 22, 1993.
And I think it's safe to say I have only seen this episode maybe twice before we did the rewatch. And this is another one of those episodes that I was pretty much convinced was a Next Generation episode. It started off and I'm like, wait a minute, this was on Next Generation. And then realized It was a Deep Space Nine.
I guess it all munges together in your memory.
Yeah, it kind of does. I guess because this felt like a TNG episode.
Yeah. Well, before we get going on this episode, anything you want to talk about from the previous podcast?
Nope, it was perfect.
We did a relatively short recording, not because we didn't like the episode, but it was a little bit of a peculiar one and had a slightly different feel to it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's why it ended up short. It didn't have a lot of Star Trek elements in it. It did advance the storyline a bit in terms of establishing the relationships between Odo and Quark and Kira and, you know, how he met them.
Yeah.
But otherwise, yeah, there wasn't a lot of Star Trek-y stuff.
It was a good origin story.
Yeah, it was a little bit of an origin story. Well, this time, in today's podcast, we're going to try something a little bit different by easing up a bit on the details of each scene to shorten the recording and shorten the time it takes to edit and reduce a little bit of the unfun part for me, to be blunt. We're still going to hit every scene because that's important to us. We're just going to focus in on the things that we think are important in each scene or interesting or funny, whatever. Just maybe not in every single line and every movement as we have been doing. So let's see how that goes.
Yes, it's worth an experiment.
Yeah. Who's going to stop us? It's our podcast.
That's kind of a good point.
Yeah. Okay, let's get started.
Okay, I'm ready.
In the cold open, Sisko starts us off by giving a personal log saying he had nearly forgotten that it's the fourth anniversary of Wolf 359 when his wife died. He's sitting on his couch in his quarters late at night, and Jake comes out of his bedroom saying he was having a nightmare. He couldn't find his way to their quarters, but he somehow ended up in ops, and his dad wasn't there, and then the floor started to slope, and he was scared. That sounds like a pretty scary dream to me. Then he tells Sisko that he loves him, and we are 2 minutes and 13 seconds in, and I'm already crying. This is not a good way to get started.
Well, clearly you can see Sisko's still recovering from the loss, but it's not as debilitating as it has been.
Yeah, it's not as fresh. Yeah.
And you also see more of that bonding between Jake and Sisko, which is, it's very idealized, but to me, it's kind of that Star Trek thing of it's something to be strived for. That wouldn't it be great if everybody had that sort of relationship?
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly the greatest father ever portrayed on Star Trek.
Yeah.
I don't think there's much doubt about that. There's that little part at the end of that scene when Jake heads back to bed and on his way back, he stops and he says that he misses her. And Sisko says, so does he. And they've talked about Jennifer without really talking about her. I mean, it's really heartbreaking and really sweet the way that they do it.
Oh, yeah. That was very good.
Before we leave the scene, I have to say that Jake's pajamas are just not cool. It's my one complaint in the scene. They're a little dumpy and cheap looking.
Yeah.
But maybe it's because he grows so fast. I think he's another foot taller. I don't know. He's like 9 feet tall.
He's driving the wardrobe department crazy.
That's what I'm wondering.
What do you mean nothing fits?
You do see a little bit of his adult face coming through now.
Yeah.
That's how grown up he is.
Oh, yes.
Well, next we see Sisko walking on the upper level of the promenade, and he stops to look out of the window, and a female alien kind of appears behind him. She looks mostly human except for her ears, but Sisko is, like, immediately drawn to her. She says her name is Fenna, and she's played by Sally Richardson Whitfield, although at the time when she portrayed this character, she was Sally Elise Richardson in IMDb. You learn things that are maybe useless.
Yeah.
But she's from so many things, including Eureka. That was the first place that I recognized
her
from. But she was also in movies like I Am Legend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was in I Am Legend?
Yes. The wife.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. This brief scene.
Yeah.
She was an I Am Legend briefly.
Ah.
So they have a pleasant conversation about the constellations and then how they like the station. And when Sisko offers to give her a tour of the station, he takes his eyes off of her for a split second and then she's gone as if she disappeared. And then we cue the theme song.
They were getting on like a house on fire.
Yeah.
I'll deal with this a little more in the overanalysis, but I find it strange how the promenade is actually dark and has like a quiet time.
It is strange because what time is it? It's not like there's big clocks everywhere. I mean, yeah. I guess they just try to follow some kind of normalcy in terms of a day because people can't be up for 24 hours. So maybe they just establish a baseline of what a day is and that's just what they stick to.
Yeah.
And they dim the lights and then they make the lights brighter.
I'll talk about this later.
So I shouldn't talk about it anymore?
Yeah.
Okay. Sisko comes into ops and he's unusually jovial. He ribs Miles, who's fixing something in that lower level part of ops, and he tells him that he wouldn't be happy somewhere where everything worked, which is what I thought too.
Now, Miles, if you notice, is once again completely violating health and safety. No welding goggles, no protective gear. He's working with some kind of what looks like a arc welding rod, and there's sparks flying up.
Mm.
He's just asking for some kind of workplace accident.
We're not great with safety on the station.
Clearly.
Or security. Then Sisko orders tea and completely confuses Kira, who says he normally has racked Gino, so she notices he's acting weird.
And he can't talk to anyone unless he's had his first one.
Right, but now he has tea for some weird reason. Then Dax calls from the science lab saying Professor Sayatek is there with her, and Sisko says he's on his way.
So, do you think he's turning into Picard if he's now starting to have tea?
No.
Oh.
That's my summary. No.
Oh.
In the science lab, we meet Professor Gideon Sayatek, who is a terraformer. Privately, Dax says to Sisko that humility and common sense aren't part of the job description, letting us know that this guy is going to be a bit of a blowhard.
So we learn here as well that terraformers also completely violate all sorts of health and safety.
Yeah.
This is an OSHA nightmare.
The whole station?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
The working environment is clearly unsafe.
Yes. This character is played by Richard Kiley, who is a very familiar face with 137 IMDb credits.
Wow.
Also, like Frank Langella, this dude is a Tony Award winner. But in addition to that, he also is an Emmy Award winner and a Golden Globe Award winner for Thornbirds in the early 80s.
Oh my gosh.
For some guest appearances on a couple of other things.
Wow.
And here's the big one.
Uh-huh.
Did you know?
His voice
is the one you hear narrating the tour in Jurassic Park.
Oh, that's too funny.
Anyway, Sisko tells him that he's a great admirer of his work, and they discuss somewhere that he apparently terraformed that Sisko visited.
Yeah.
And the guy is very impressed with his own work, which is hilarious.
He's very, very full of himself.
Yeah. They have some light ego flirting. I'm going to trademark this phrase.
Ego flirting. Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I like that.
Though the ego flirt is a bit one-sided in this scene, but still, that's the best way I can describe it. They discuss the current project and the reason that he's there on the station, and it's to reignite a dead sun called Epsilon 119. Sayatek is enamored with the idea of bringing new life to an entire solar system. His ego is so large, which I suppose is the point that they're trying to make.
Yeah.
That terraformers start to feel like gods or larger than life in some way.
Oh, very clearly, yes.
And Dax says something like, well, let's hope it works. Right now it's only a theory. And the guy's like, of course it will work. I never fail. His overconfidence is obnoxious.
He failed once, but he said he didn't like it.
Oh my gosh, that guy. Then we go to Quark's, and Dax and Sisko are having dinner, and she notices that he's distracted and appears to be looking for someone.
She's put a spell on him, clearly.
He gives her no info, and she abruptly gets up to leave, saying she's working with Miles to boost Sayatek's ship's maximum speed to warp 9.5. She says if the experiment fails, the sun will go supernova, and they'll need to get out of there really fast. Like, what?
I feel like this might be another one of those plans that they have.
This is a terrible plan. Our plan is, if the sun goes supernova, we're going to fly out as fast as we can. That's the plan.
Yeah, I fail to see what the problem with their plans is. They're always good.
They are always bad.
Straight power play.
Sisko is now looking out of the window on the promenade, and he kind of sighs to himself, like maybe he imagined Fenna. But when he turns around, she is right behind him, magically. She says she had to rush off before, but now she wants that tour of the station he promised. And so begins the flirtation of these two. This is a very flirty episode. Lots of flirting.
At this point, shouldn't he be suspicious?
Well, she's not suspicious
like
yet.
Twice.
But she didn't materialize.
That's true.
She seemed to appear behind him.
Yeah. So what you're saying is either she's a stalker or Quark's up to something with a holodeck program.
Oh, Lord. Well, when he tries to ask her questions like, where are you from? How did you get here? She says she can't tell him anything, and then she just runs away. So at least she doesn't just dematerialize or beam away or whatever, but she runs off to the elevator.
Yeah. We get to see a nice view of the docking pylon of the station behind it.
Yeah, I like how he says he likes that view, but normally there are ships blocking it.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Did you notice he said to her, do you always do that? Say exactly the right thing. Seriously. This is a Quark holodeck program. He should be extremely suspicious.
I thought that was a weird statement. I didn't really see how she was saying exactly the right thing, but she was certainly coming across as very kind and also, like, easy to talk to.
Yeah.
But I didn't think it was suspiciously perfect or anything like that.
Oh, okay.
Did you?
I thought they were giving us a hint towards it being suspicious.
Yeah.
In the way that she was saying the sort of things that would appeal to Sisko.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But that's not really what was happening. So that's why ultimately I didn't write it down.
Oh, okay. I see. Well, I took that and the fact she was very cagey about telling him anything as really suspicious.
Yeah. Now we go to the Sisko dinner table, and Jake is telling a story about some kid who threw up at the sight of Klingon food. But Sisko is distracted by his hot new girlfriend. That's what I wrote.
Wow, Sisko is a lovesick teenager.
Jake says he's showing all three signs of being in love, which after 5 minutes, it's a little hard to be in love. But I suppose it can happen on TV.
Yeah, it's a limited length show. You've got to fit a lot of stuff into the time frame.
Anyway, Jake learned these signs from Nog, so I was sure to write them down. Because it's so helpful. Because Sisko is like, you're talking to Nog about girls again?
That seems like a 9.9 out of 10 on the bad ideas scale.
Right? We haven't seen Nog for a while.
Yeah.
But the three signs of being in love, according to Nog, are loss of appetite, daydreaming, and smiling all the time. Which are just adorable. Then Jake says if he is in love, it's okay with him. That kid, oh my gosh, he's so sweet.
Yes.
He wants to meet her, but Sisko says it's kind of difficult because she keeps disappearing. And then this scene has this weird ending of Jake not quite knowing what to look at or what to do. He needs some scene ending soap opera training.
Yes. It's the way, though, he does give that look. Okay, so my dad may be going crazy. Right.
No.
He does. That's what I took from that.
Oh, funny. Then we go to security, and Odo is briefing his security dudes on someone named Vilas Thed, who's coming to the station. He's a short-range telepath, and you have to stay 5 meters away from him at all times. Social distancing.
Oh, this is interesting. A short-range telepath. That seems strangely coincidental, does it not?
It really does, although they never bring this particular person up again or this specific thing. It does seem related.
Yeah.
I was thinking, though, too, in the current pandemic world, that maybe it's better to think of people that way. Instead of, like, they might be infected or you might infect them, you just think everybody is a short-range telepath, so you got to stay away, otherwise they can read your mind.
Oh, that's a good point. I like that idea.
Sisko comes in now asking for a personal favor. He needs help finding Fenna, but he doesn't know anything about her or how she got to the station. He only knows that she's humanoid and wearing red. Odo says he'll do what he can.
Not a lot for the Odo mysteries to work on.
No, he says he'll do what he can, but he scoffs when Sisko leaves. Do you think he was scoffing because it's a personal love-related thing or because Sisko had no info?
It could be either with Odo.
Or both.
Yeah, I mean, really.
Yeah.
Yes, both would work because it's love-related, which, you know, we already know he doesn't have a very high opinion of it. And the fact that he doesn't have a lot of facts to work on when he is so detail-oriented. It's like, oh, really? Another goose chase. But in that scene, it is funny how suddenly interested Odo gets when he says, she may be in trouble. And he, like, instantly perks up. Oh, another Odo mystery.
I don't even remember him saying that. He said she was in trouble?
Yeah, he said she may be in trouble.
Oh, I totally missed that.
Yeah.
That would make Odo more interested.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
And he like instantly perks up.
Yeah. Odo loves a mystery.
He does.
Morn loves a crowd. Well, a mob.
Bars, crowd, mob. I think that's the order.
Dax loves a completely inappropriate piece of information. What's that called? When you give a TMI.
Yeah.
Dax loves a TMI.
Dax enjoys TMI, yes.
And Kira, I don't think Kira likes anything. She's we haven't seen it yet, whatever it is.
Yep.
Then we go to Ops, and Dax asks to speak with Sisko in his office. And then she says she wants to know about this woman that she saw him with last night on the promenade. Sisko doesn't give her anything, and she complains that he used to tell Curzon everything. And now that she's a woman, he won't tell her stuff. And he does this weird, hysterical laugh and says there's nothing to tell. This is a weird episode. That was so strange.
Yeah.
Though in truth, he doesn't know anything except her name and her sexy outfit. He doesn't know anything else to tell her.
At least this is a plus. It means that somebody else can see her, so he's not crazy.
Yes, I thought the same thing.
And also, flipping back a scene, that rules out the short-range telepath if Dax was able to see her.
Oh, true. Unless she was within, what was it, 5 meters? 5 meters is a long ways.
Yeah. I assume they discounted that deliberate red herring.
Yeah, you're right. That's what it was. It was a red herring.
Yeah.
And she was wearing a red dress.
Well, I think part of this scene was just to reinforce that Curzon was basically a womanizer. They left the drunk part out this time, though.
Well, they say something else about Curzon later that does not paint him in a good light. So Sisko gives a personal log, and he says Odo hasn't found Fenna yet, and Professor Sayatek has invited the senior staff to dinner on his ship, the Prometheus. That's an interesting name. Watch out for aliens.
That would seem like a perfect name for his ship. You know, stealing fire from the gods. I'm pretty sure he would see himself in the role of Prometheus, if not Zeus.
Yeah, for sure. So the guy is holding court about how brilliant he is, which Kira is not enjoying. Bashir seems to relate very well to him and asks how he's going to reignite the dead sun. And the dude says he's going to use a remote-piloted shuttle pod to deliver protomatter into the dead star, causing a cascade effect, which will bring it back to life. And Dax says, of course, if it doesn't work, it will be the last thing we ever see. Oh, my God.
That was a good response from Dax.
She is very dubious about this mission, and she's got the one-liners coming at him. I think she's not super impressed with this guy's ego.
Yeah, she's lived such a long time. I think it would probably be kind of wearing on her.
I suppose that's true.
I mean, if you stacked up all her achievements across all those lifetimes, although maybe none of them are as big as terraforming a planet, they probably is a significant list.
Well, she's probably run into a lot of blowhards in her time.
Yeah.
And I think many times when somebody does have such a massive ego, they rarely live up to it.
Yeah.
In this case, this guy apparently kind of does. He doesn't prove to be a fraud, I guess, is what I was going to say.
Right, right.
Kira, on the other hand, just does not like anything that she views as nonsense. And she just views this guy as total nonsense.
Well, the other difference is, I think, people with an ego like that, certainly that I've encountered, have not been very personable. And this guy seems very jovial and entertaining and sort of a good sport.
Well, with an audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Hasn't protomatter been denounced by every ethical scientist in the galaxy as dangerously unpredictable?
Yes, according to Savick in Search for Spock.
So it would make sense that this guy is using it.
It kind of would.
Yeah, and I like how Dax does really make a much less optimistic approach to things.
Yeah, well, after she makes her little crack, he says nothing of worth was ever created by a pessimist. And he also says no one has ever accused him of understatement. And Dax says, certainly no one who has read your autobiography. And then he says, 9 volumes and counting.
Of course it would be nine volumes.
Yeah. At this point, though, the look on Miles' face is pretty funny. And then he says something about writing as many books as he has marriages, which, why even get married at that point? I don't understand that kind of stuff at all. Maybe it's because it was the 90s, so it still seems like the thing to do, but why keep doing it?
You know, this guy reminds me of a somewhat popular author I've seen at Comic-Con panels. They seem very familiar.
Oh, my God.
They even look similar.
I am not going to say that guy's name. I do not want it on my podcast.
I think it's funny that you know exactly who I'm talking about.
I know exactly who you mean. He looks exactly like him. No, thank you.
Oh.
And has a similar attraction to himself. Let's just say that.
Yes. Do you think Julian was just trolling them?
No. I think Julian thought he was a kindred spirit.
Oh, I thought Julian was just being deliberately sort of
No, obtuse. Julian is impressed by impressive things.
Oh.
He's easily swayed by shiny objects, basically.
Oh, I took it the other way of just because of that little sort of smirk he gives at the end of it, that he's kind of, you know, trolling the others.
Well, think about in that episode called, I think it was Melora.
Yes.
How impressed he was with her accomplishments. I mean, he had studied them. He knew everything about them.
Oh, that's true.
He was really trying hard to relate to her.
Yeah.
I think that he relates to people who have these big accomplishments, or at least what he thinks are big accomplishments.
Oh, okay. I will take that as an answer.
Then Gideon starts bragging about his wife's cooking, and you pretty much know exactly where this is going at this point, because it's Star Trek. He heads out to get his wife, Nadel, who at this point he actually calls Nidel, but after this they call her Nadel. While he's out of the room, Kira asks Sisko if he'd even notice if they weren't there, which is exactly what I would have said.
Kira's not good with insufferable bores, is she?
No, she does not like it. But really, he would notice because he needs an audience.
Yes.
And Sisko tells her to stay put.
I love how he calls in the favor because he had to have dinner with so many Bajoran ministers. I think he said two dozen.
Yes. While he's out of the room, they all laugh at his ego. And what I laughed at was when Bashir says he finds him remarkable. And Kira just gives him this look like, uh-huh, of course you do. That was funny. Then the dude comes back into the room with his wife. And oh, guess who it is? And Dax turns to Sisko and quietly says, well, now we have something to talk about. Oh my God, I laughed out loud. That was hilarious. There's the Dax loving an inappropriate comment.
Yep. It was on form for the way we're seeing Dax develop and her sort of irreverent sense of humor.
Yes. Now they're all sitting around the table having finished dinner. Julian and Miles were very happy with the meal and they ask for the recipe, but the wife says that it's Gideon's recipe. Of course it is.
Naturally.
And he launches into this extremely complex description while Sisko and Dax whisper to each other that the wife is acting like she doesn't even know Sisko. And Dax is like, it is the same woman, isn't it? Meanwhile, Kira is dying for an escape from this event.
The look on Nadel's face when Satek starts going on about his recipe is priceless. I mean, she has this total look of, oh, not this crap again.
Oh, yeah, she is over him by a long ways.
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny because she doesn't really say anything, but it's very much a body language thing if she gives this impression of she's not really impressed with his ego.
When everyone excuses themselves to the other room, Kira is the first one out the door. I thought that was great. Sisko lingers in the dining room to try and chat with Nadel, who says she's never seen him before or met him before.
I notice they leave Nadel behind when they go in the other room. I like this reinforcing of traditional gender roles.
Well, somehow it was her job to cook, but it wasn't her recipe. She had to do whatever he said. And now she has to clean up after all these people. Oh my gosh. That is not a happy person.
I think we now know why he may have been married 9 times.
Yeah, right. As Sisko asks her if her name is Fenna, and she gets a funny look on her face, but she says he's mistaken her for someone else. It's very suspicious.
Very.
And also, she's dressed very differently from Fenna. It's very conservative, and her actions are really muted. By comparison, she seems really sad. Now we're in the elevator going up to ops, and Sisko is insisting to Dax that it was the same woman. He's upset that he felt drawn to someone for the first time since his wife's death, and it's a married woman. That was when there's this whole line about, well, that wouldn't have bothered Curzon. I mean, Curzon just sounds like a terrible person.
Yeah, so he's a shameless womanizer.
Yeah.
And we've also established that he drank too much, so...
Yes.
When do we get onto the gambling?
Yeah, he is... Yeah. He's not great. Then Odo comes in and says he can't find anyone named Fenna, but Sisko says he already found her. She's aboard the Prometheus. But uh-oh, the mystery deepens because Odo says nobody but Sayatek has disembarked from the Prometheus its entire time at the station. Dun,
oh,
dun,
dear.
Dun. There's the Odo mystery.
I feel bad for Sisko. He seems genuinely drawn to this woman, but he just doesn't know quite what's going on now.
Right. It's very strange.
Or what the deal is. That's a terrible position to be in.
Yes. Now he's hanging out on the second floor of the promenade again, hoping to run into Fenna. But he gets Quark instead.
Yeah, that's not a good trade.
We could have done without Quark in this episode.
This, I guess, is where Quark is actually being a little bit impressive. He's trying to look for an advantage and make an inroad with Sisko somehow.
Yeah.
At this point, if I were Sisko, I would be very concerned that this was all some kind of Quark holodeck trick to try and get him to confide.
Yeah.
It seems like the kind of skeezy thing that Quark would do.
Well, it really does. I mean, he came up there with a drink, which Sisko didn't want, and then he invites him to come down to the bar to talk about women, which Sisko declines. And then he makes a suggestive crack about how the holosuites are always open, and Sisko kind of stomps off. I thought this whole scene was a waste of time, though. Do you think they were actually trying to establish something with Quark?
No, I think it might be trying to be another red herring, like the short-range telepath, make you think maybe Quark was up to something with this, that it was a holodeck program or something like that.
I guess that could be. Make you think, oh, maybe it is a character from the holosuite.
Right, exactly.
Okay, the scene felt like a waste of my time. Sisko arrives in his quarters just as Fenna appears running up to him saying, "I missed you," and giving him a hug, which Sisko does not respond well to. He tells her he had dinner with someone who looks just like her, and she says, "How strange." But she is either playing dumb to all of it, or she really doesn't know what he's talking about. He tries to get her to say where she's from and who she is, but she's got no info. And then she says, "When I came here, I thought I was looking for a place that I belong. But I wasn't looking for a place. I was looking for a person. I was looking for you."
Oh.
And then she kisses him, which at this juncture, he's got to be extremely confused about what is going on.
At the very least.
Especially when she suddenly stands up, looks at her hands, and says, "Benjamin," just as she turns into a blue light and disappears. Uh-oh.
Yep.
Ad break.
She actually disappeared right in front of him.
Yes. Poof.
At this point, I think he should have stood up and shouted, "Quark!"
Or Odo, or someone. Next, we go to the Prometheus, where Miles is telling Dax that he stretched the engines to 9.6, even though their theoretical limit is 9.5. He wishes her luck and leaves, just as Sisko appears, saying he's decided to go along.
Oh, that look on Miles's face as he walks off. Good luck, Lieutenant.
Oh,
that was very clearly a, "I'm really glad I don't have to work with Dr. Full of himself."
Better you than me.
Yeah. Perfectly on brand for Miles.
Dax tells Sisko this mission is dangerous, but he thinks the key to Fenna's disappearance is on the Prometheus, so he has to go. I think it's really strange that he would go on a dangerous mission just because of this disappearing woman who he's known for 2 days. Or 1 day. I don't know how long it is. It's a day or two.
That's because you're not a guy.
Okay. I'll accept that answer. On the bridge of the Prometheus, everyone is doing sciencey stuff. Gideon and Sisko enter the bridge, and the professor starts spewing something about how this achievement will be the biggest thing he can ever do.
He's so brilliant.
Like this will be the end of what he can accomplish.
I'm so impressed with him.
Really? He quotes some Klingon poetry.
I loved how Sisko totally took the wind out of the old windbag sails when he interrupted him and quoted the Klingon poetry line, which was, "Pity the warrior who slays all his foes."
Yes.
He wasn't expecting that.
He wasn't, but didn't he say that they learned that at Starfleet Academy?
Yeah.
Although there were plenty of poems we learned when I was in college, but I couldn't quote any of them. But essentially, Sisko is grilling him for info, and he is full of hot air, so he's happy to talk about himself.
Oh.
And then he talks about meeting Nadelle as the daughter of a local dignitary on her planet, and she was infatuated with him. The actress must be literally a third of his age. Not even half. A third.
That's very ageist of you.
He was born in 1922, I believe. And she was born, I want to say, in 1967. So 45 years.
Oh my gosh.
Difference in age. That is not a good look on anybody.
But she is absolutely stunning.
She is. Well, sure.
Yeah.
He says she's never been off of her own world before. And he goes on and on about how much she loves him. But we haven't seen any evidence of that. She showed no love for him at that dinner party. Then we go to Sisko's quarters on the Prometheus, and there's Fenna. Sisko calls Dax immediately, who arrives and starts using her tricorder. And she says, "Fenna has no cellular structure or DNA patterns. She's pure energy." Ugh.
One of those energy projections. But where from?
Yeah. Then we jump to Gideon's quarters, and Nadelle is unconscious with an upset Gideon next to her. He shouts at Dax to help her, but Dax doesn't know what she can do. She can just tell that Nadelle is in shock. Then Gideon sees the other woman and says, "Fenna, I should have known." And the mystery thickens.
So the doctor knows who she is.
That's right.
Into the ad break. Perfect timing.
When we come back from the break, Gideon says Nadelle is a psychoprojective telepath, and Fenna is just a projection created by his wife's unconscious mind. Dax continues to read her tricorder, saying Nadelle can't survive this. So Sisko ushers Dax and Fenna out and sits Gideon down to get him talking.
He's had enough of the professor's bluster.
The professor says that she doesn't even know it's happening, but in times of deep emotional distress, Helenons, that's where she's from, I guess?
Yep.
Helenons lose control of their abilities. He says that all of his marriages start out great, but a few years of togetherness always leads to them leaving him.
So we discover he is a truly terrible husband.
Yes.
As well as probably the worst blowhard of all time.
Oh, man.
The greatest blowhard of all time.
Can you imagine trying to live with that ego all the time?
All I can say is a warm wind is blowing in from...
Minicoy.
Perfect.
Oh, my gosh. Well, anyway, he says the trouble is Helenan's mate for life, and she can never leave him no matter what she might want to do. That is horrible and grim. You're a terrible husband. Stop marrying people. Oh, my God.
That would be a good idea.
It almost feels abusive, and it's terrible. Anyway. Then we go to Sisko's quarters, and Fenna is trying to convince Sisko that she's real, but she has no idea where she came from. She still can't answer any questions, but she doesn't want to disappear. He says what they have is just a dream, and it's not real anyway, and that's sad but true. She says she loves him and she always will, which, oh my gosh, in 38 minutes of a show, she's fallen madly in love with him. Dax calls Sisko at this point, saying Saya Tech has launched the shuttle to Epsilon 119, but it's not remotely. He's on board. Then we go to the bridge, and Saya Tech is on the view screen saying he hopes the transmitter is working because he doesn't want to make history without an audience. Uh-huh.
Of course. I like the way in this scene, Sisko just immediately takes command, if you notice.
Yes. He says, you don't have to do this, Gideon. And he also tries to order him to bring the shuttle pod back. But the guy says it's too late. He says this will be his crowning achievement, but also that this is the only way to set his wife free. He also says he left his obituary behind and he wants Sisko to make sure it gets published.
It's probably several volumes long.
Yes, at least. Yes, it's at least 9 volumes. He says he didn't get a chance to add the last entry and he wants the record to show that he sacrificed himself at the altar of science. Oh my God.
Of course he did.
He shouts, "Let there be light," as the shuttle crashes into the sun. So he really does think he's God.
Yes.
Behind Sisko on the bridge is Fenna, and there's a tear streaming down her face as the orange light from the reignited sun hits them all, and then she disappears. Forever.
Oh.
I don't know about the actual science here, but if they reignited a sun, and they were close enough to it that it just took the shuttle a couple of minutes to get there, I don't see how there's any way they're far enough away to survive this process. This whole thing is very flaky to me.
Hand-wavy science. Mm. It's Star Trek science.
It is hand-wavy Star Trek science. I did wonder, after having that sort of crisis there, I also did wonder, well, maybe this is just the first phase and it actually takes years for it, or decades even, for it to reignite. I don't know.
Oh, that's a good point.
It might be a very slow process.
Yeah, this is just the first stage.
I explained it away for myself.
Oh, there you go.
As you often have to do in Star Trek.
Precisely. Good job.
Thank you. Then we're back on the station, and Sisko says in his log that the sun thingy worked, and it's a fitting memorial to a brilliant man. Nadelle has made a complete recovery, but she doesn't remember Fenna at all. And then we drop to Sisko hanging out on the promenade again when Nadelle approaches. She's heading back to her home planet, and she wishes she could remember Fenna, but she can't. Sisko tells her that he will remember for both of them.
She is absolutely stunning in that outfit. That whole look and the way she, they have the hair and the whole dress and the way she's made up. She is... Yeah. Absolutely.
The dress that Fenna was wearing, though, was considerably more revealing. This is much more conservative.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, she's a good looking person, no doubt. She asks what Fenna was like, and Sisko says she was just like you. And then Nadelle walks away slowly, and that's the end of the episode.
That was a really nice thing to say, though.
It was. Well, overanalysis, what have you got?
Well, my first part is actually the very amusing end scene, because I kind of noticed some of the same extras walking backwards and forwards in that scene. It's
really
worth rewatching that end scene just to see how many times the woman in the gray Bajoran uniform walks backwards and forwards, the guy swinging his arms, the woman with the green sweater and a bag over her shoulder, it's actually kind of funny.
Maybe they're just getting in their steps.
Oh, could be. Could be.
Because I sometimes walk back and forth when I'm just trying to get in my steps.
I actually watched that scene seriously like half a dozen times so I could actually write down order of who was walking, who would be walking forward and then walking back. It was kind of funny.
I love it.
That's kind of silly thing I do, watching scenes like that. But yeah. Yes, definitely there was not a lot of extras in that, but they just made them circle, basically.
Was Morn in this episode?
I did not see
Morn.
Yeah,
I didn't either.
Yeah.
Gosh, another episode with no Morn. It's so disappointing.
Yeah. Well, onto more serious overanalysis. Now, why was the starship so close to the star if all they needed to do was send a shuttle down?
Remotely.
Yes, and there was a risk of the star going supernova. I mean... Couldn't you just drop out of warp, drop the shuttle off, and then run away?
Get the heck out of there.
Yeah. Back up a few light years, see if it explodes.
Yep.
I have the feeling it's another one of those terrible plans you keep on warning us about.
Yes. At the same time, no one else seemed to think it was particularly dangerous. Really, only Dax was dubious.
Yeah.
So maybe it wasn't really that risky.
Hmm. Or maybe they just listened to Sayatek, who said, no, it'll be fine.
That's probably it. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
That's 100% it. Everything will be fine. I never fail.
Precisely. Now, next thing.
Yeah.
Wasn't Sayatek being extremely selfish in marrying someone from a culture that has a mate for life tradition?
Uh-huh.
I mean, given that he's been married so many times, so he's clearly a dreadful partner.
Uh-huh.
And all of them leave.
Yes.
That's a really obnoxious move.
Yeah.
When you're in such an insufferable bore that you drive all partners away after a couple of years and you marry someone with that culture of mate for life.
That's why I said it felt abusive.
Yeah. And do you think, would that be religious or do you think it was cultural that they have the mate for life thing? They never really covered that.
Well, I'm going to say it was some sort of mystical, physiological thing. And the reason I'm going to say that is because there's no way for the wife, who was unconscious, I guess, to know that he died.
Oh.
And Fenna disappeared.
Yeah.
Because they weren't communicating, although maybe there was some kind of communication. But how? She was a projection.
Right.
Yeah, she wasn't sentient in any way. So she wasn't communicating back.
Oh.
But maybe there is some kind of a psychic link that they don't really know about or couldn't detect.
But oh, okay. That's a good point.
To me, because she disappeared as soon as he died, I felt like, ooh, something mystical happened.
Yeah. Oh, that would make a lot of sense. Okay, I'll go with that.
Because really, you could just leave him otherwise.
That's true.
Yeah.
But like I said, if it was a cultural or religious thing, those unfortunately have kind of a strong grip over people.
Yes, but things that are harmful often change when one person stands up for it, makes the first move away from it.
That's true. But some people don't want to be the first one.
I know.
That's why I can't decide, is this episode about spousal abuse, archaic marriage practices, both, or even just, you know, finding an easy way to kill your husband?
I don't know. Women are not treated great in many of these Star Trek episodes, I'm afraid. It's a little anti-woman. I don't know. I don't like it. And I don't like, too, that we made the guy the hero, so everything's okay. And it's like, dudes, come on.
Really? I didn't feel like he came off as a hero.
That's how it was written.
Really?
Well, sure. He saved the day by sacrificing himself.
Oh, I see. Yes.
What else would you say?
Okay.
I mean, it's a bit of martyrdom, but still, he's just viewing it as a way to be the hero.
Okay. That would fit with the character as well.
Yeah.
Okay, and the final points I have. I really like the Bajoran military uniforms. Just from the bit at the ending where they're on the deck and they've got the people with the red uniforms and the grey uniforms walking past in a circle. I really like the uniforms. We might have to think about cosplaying that.
A Bajoran uniform?
Yes.
With re-binge DS9 on the back?
Exactly. There you go. And my final point. Mm. I believe we know one person who has actually modeled their life on Sayatek.
And again, we're not saying that guy's name. I'm not supporting him. I have accidentally seen him on multiple panels. I saw him on purpose a couple of times, and then I'm done with him. Yeah. Moving on.
Before we leave over analysis, we're supposed to talk about the nighttime thing.
Yes, the shifts.
I don't get why Sisko is walking the promenade at night. I mean, how do they define night, considering Bajor has 26 hours? So which period do they determine as the normal daylight hours of Deep Space Nine?
Well, I suppose it's possible that they pick a location to sync with and they just sync with them.
Like the capital?
Yeah, like maybe the capital of Bajor or something, you know, the nearest planet. But really, it doesn't matter. I guess they could pick any 26-hour period. It seems to make sense to try to stay within the schedule of the nearest planet or the planet they interact with the most.
Yeah, that's true.
And then I'm just imagining when it's the evening shift, they dim the lights and the shops are generally closed. I mean, it could easily be like Vegas.
Well, I find it odd because it attracts ships from all over the quadrant.
Right.
And now we're starting to have ships and commerce going through the wormhole.
Right.
So people coming to the station would be on the time scales of their planet.
Yeah.
So surely you'd be heading towards like a 24-hour operation of something's always has to be open.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that it is. I'm sure that there is a second shift running ups, second or third, I guess, shifts running ups. I don't know how to do that when it's not 24 hours. But anyway, I'm sure they figure it out. And then they can always use the Replimat if they need food. And I'm sure there's a night host. Like any hotel.
Yeah. So you think really that they have a defined period of time that they class as the nighttime on the station?
Yes, I think that's exactly what they do.
Yeah.
Because okay. I think they need defined downtime.
Yeah.
And if they keep it on a schedule, it's better for people, right? They get their appropriate rest and regeneration time.
Okay.
Yeah.
That does seem reasonable that you would put those sort of time periods in.
Yes.
Okay. And that wraps it up for me.
I have a little bit of overanalysis. Just one thing.
Really?
This is a very Star Trek episode.
Yes. This is why I thought it was TNG.
Sure. Someone mysterious arrives. One of the main characters falls in love in 5 minutes. She's not what she seems. And then she's gone forever. Very Star Trek.
Yeah. Wouldn't it normally be Wesley?
No. Geordi. Riker. Even Beverly had a similar couple of episodes like that. Deanna, everybody. It's very Star Trek. Oh my gosh, even Picard. We could go back and find at least one episode per character on Next Gen.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was my overanalysis. It was just very Star Trek. So let's move on to women in the future. And we've already kind of talked about it in terms of the character of Fenna versus Nadel.
Yeah.
Neither character was particularly fleshed out. Nadel was just unhappy and reserved, while Fenna was like, oh, aren't you interesting to Sisko?
Yeah.
Yet she had nothing interesting to offer him, which is why I would find it a little bit difficult for someone to fall in love that quickly with something that shallow. But I can't look at it from Sisko's point of view. I can't quite relate to him or his situation.
Yeah.
But I think we've all had at least casual encounters with people who we thought we liked or we were attracted to just because maybe they looked good to us. And then we would find out that there's not much under the surface.
Is that in reference to your current husband?
Oh, gosh, no. We've been together for a very long time. That would not have lasted that long.
Yeah, I'm joking. Oh, interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting take on it.
I don't like the superficial character and the fact that Sisko is madly, deeply in love with her.
Yeah.
In some cases in Star Trek, they're able to cast some kind of a spell. Like there was that episode of Next Gen where there was the woman who was supposed to marry someone else and the first person she saw would fall in love with her. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And that was Picard by accident. It wasn't supposed to be.
Yeah.
But that was at least slightly different in that she was sort of casting a spell on him and there was something else mystical going on. But in this case, she was just a projection and he essentially fell in love with how she looked and her red dress. And I just found that shallow and weak.
Well, in the original series, there was the Harry Mudd, the women who were with Harry Mudd who could,
oh my God,
you know,
awful.
Give off whatever it was, pheromones or something and be
I don't.
Attractive.
I remember that episode, but I don't remember it in detail enough to be able to speak about it.
Yeah, that's just a bit I remember. But do you think, given that she was a telepath, that some of the characteristics she was showing to Sisko were based on what he saw sort of, if you like, as an idealized partner or an idealized woman? you know, the red dress. She was interested in the station. She liked a picnic. She had these characteristics that meshed with things Sisko liked. And she picked those up telepathically.
Yeah. Okay. I hadn't thought of that. I hadn't remembered, I guess, that she was actually telepathic. So that makes sense if she were kind of reading his mind.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And then because Sisko, like you said, Sisko says that thing about how do you always say the right thing? Well, she says the right thing if she's reading his mind.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. That actually helps me feel better about the episode. It doesn't make me feel better about the sort of abusive nature of her marriage, but now I feel better about the Sisko relationship. So that's good.
Yeah.
The other thing I quite did enjoy in the episode was the pessimistic nature of Dax. She was always maybe a little bit suspicious of Sayatek, that maybe he was just all bluster and no substance.
Yeah.
But she still saw the mission through. She didn't hamper the mission in any way. You know, she did her job, but she took a couple of digs at him because she didn't really like him.
Yeah, I didn't get the impression she didn't trust his abilities. I took it as she more saw his bluster as irritating or annoying.
Yeah, as superfluous.
Yeah.
To the mission.
Right.
I just love, she had the funniest line of the whole episode when the wife appeared and she said, now we have something to talk about. Oh, man. I laughed. That was great.
Yeah.
Okay, that's all I have for women in the future, especially since we didn't see a lot of Kira. So we covered the two women essentially who were in the episode.
Well, we did cover one little interesting piece about Kira is we learned that she's using Sisko to help her agenda on Bajor.
I don't think we learned that. We just learned that he meets with ministers.
Yes.
I don't think we learned anything else about it.
And that Kira was organizing these things and getting Sisko to do it.
I don't even remember that in the conversation. He said she was organizing it? Are you sure it wasn't like Federation type things?
You made me have dinner with a dozen Bajoran ministers.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I'm thinking that he's, in theory, revered as the emissary of the prophets. So she's obviously using him to help her agenda on Bajor.
Well, I don't know if it's obvious, but that's possibly what was going on there, yes. Or, at the same time, he could just be helping her establish a more political foothold because she doesn't really have the background, the experience, and how to do that.
That's true. We have seen that is an area where she is still learning how to deal with it.
Leadership.
Yeah. She's better in a swamp fighting Cardassians.
Yes. Eating pakulas, or whatever those things were called. Spider dogs.
eating spider hot dogs.
All right. Well, I think we have reached the end of that section. So let's talk about rating. Thumbs up, thumbs down, or neutral. What is your rating?
I'm going with neutral because to me, this didn't feel like very much a Deep Space Nine. It felt much more like a Next Generation leftover
script.
That's
probably why I'm giving it a thumbs up.
Really? I am actually surprised you're giving it a thumbs up.
Very Star Trek-y to me.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly there were things in it that were dopey, like every Star Trek episode. But it felt like Star Trek.
That's funny.
That is funny. Well, all right. Any last remarks?
Yeah, this was an episode that I really didn't go back and watch again. I think this is probably only the third time I ever watched it.
Yeah, there's no reason to go back and watch it. When I do my ratings for the end of the season, like how I did season one, I pretty much sort them based on, do I want to go back and see that episode again, more or less than the one above or below it?
Right.
And I can't say that I would want to go back and watch this one again. I've seen it.
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
All right, well, that is it for Season 2, Episode 9. So come back next week for Episode 10. In the meantime, if you'd like to tell us your own overanalysis of this or any episode, or if you just want to say something nice, or you want to email me about that guy that we're not going to talk about. I shouldn't say that. I got that out. Please email us at rebingeit@gmail.com or tweet us at rebingeit. Also, check us out on talkthroughmedia.com. You can leave feedback for us there and listen to all of our other awesome podcasts.
Thanks for joining us on the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast.
That's it for me.
And that's it from me. She doesn't look like she enjoys his ego.
No. No wife would.
Well, you enjoy mine. You're permanently impressed with my brilliance. Your response to that could be, I'm glad you think that.
The fact that you want to curate my response is a sign of the ego. The patriarchy.
Oh my God, you're so funny.
That was funny.
You're the best.
I crack myself up on that
one. Yes, you do.